children. We're starting.
That's right.
Showtime. Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. With Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 75 of Crap Giggle Tip, Crap Giggle End.
Richard.
You know who we are by now. God.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Richard is going to just love the fact that he's renamed Shutters Inc. Good on you, Richard.
How you been, mate?
Mate, pretty good. Yourself?
Excellent.
You've been very, very busy?
I have. I probably shouldn't divulge exactly what I'm doing, but it's another, it's a paid project that I will be able to discuss in a couple of weeks' time. So
excellent.
Yeah, all right. So it's keeping me up late at nights.
It's so all very Bond, James Bond. Yes, secret spy stuff.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
And yourself?
Yeah, busy. You know, not so much. I haven't done as much photography. Anybody who's been to my blog has realized that I haven't done as much photography this past week.
Right.
I've just been getting a magazine together, and that's always difficult. But,
yep.
You know, it's what I love to do. But, I've got a couple of shoots to do, I've got, you know, tomorrow, and then a wedding on Sunday, and then, back to the grind.
Wow.
So it's all good. Yeah, at least it keeps my hand in. And I'm getting a review version of the new Ricoh GX100. It's their new, everybody knows who's been listening to this podcast that I'm in love with the Ricoh GR.
Yep.
This is sort of like the new GR, but the difference is that it has a little 3x zoom in it. I mean, there's a couple of other differences as well, but it functions very much the same as the GR, but the GR, as we know, has a fixed focal length lens. The Caply, the new GX100, rather, has a 3x zoom in it. Not huge, but it goes to the equivalent of 24mm to, I think, around a 70mm equivalent in 35mm photography terms. And I'm looking forward to giving that a bit of a try. I've been very impressed with these cameras from Ricoh.
Is it out on the market yet?
Yes, it is. Yes, absolutely.
And what are they worth?
They're about $899 or something retail. They're not, cheapest compacts
Australian.
In the world. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's about what,
probably
$17? American or something. If you live in the States, just rush out and buy yourself half a dozen of the things.
$30 pretty strong at the moment.
No, it's not too bad. Yeah, I mean, not too bad.
I looked at it the other day. It was like 82 cents against the greenback.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, so it's not quite $17, but it's, But look, these cameras, they're not designed for... I mean, they are, in a way, designed for mums and dads to use if you know your way around a little camera, but, they are designed for, say, the amateur, the enthusiast, the pro who wants to have a carry-around camera that's high quality, lots of control, and, pulls out a great image, but is still compact and usable as a carry around, and that's why these things are just fabulous. They're a beautiful mixture of both. So I'm looking forward to giving that a try, and I'm also getting my hands on the new Leica Celux 2.
Ooh!
Now it's a little compact camera.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love an M8. Oh man, I'd love an M8.
That's obviously their digital SLR.
It's not an SLR, actually. It's the M series rangefinders that they that Leica have had, but they've got a digital one now. You know, the M4, the M5, the M6.
I'm not familiar, but anyway,
they're rangefinder cameras, like the in much the same style as, say, the Second World War, First World War photographers used.
Oh, okay.
That had the rangefinder with the interchangeable lenses. That legend basically continues on right into the 21st century. But now they've got these rangefinders. Then the M8 is the latest one. And it's a digital version of these legendary cameras, and they are absolutely beautiful to use.
Right.
I know that there are several photographers in Australia who use them professionally at weddings because they are so quick. They're so small, very silent cameras, and Brett Jacques is and David Oliver are two very well known Australian photographers who use them, and pull out beautiful images as a result. But they're about $7,000 or $8,000.
Oh,
so yeah, and I spend my time doing podcasts instead of earning millions of dollars. So much as I'd love one, I'm not that famous yet that they're just going to give me one. So I don't think I'll ever get one. But I am getting my hands on a little Leica Celux 2, which is about, which just fits very small, very tiny into my palm. And these are great little compacts. So I will keep you up to date on how they work and, you know, what
we'll
how impressive
some
they
images
are.
Images when you've shot some stuff with them.
I will. I'm going to shoot some stuff over the weekend with the Ricoh, and depending on when I get the Celux, the little Leica, I'll keep you up to date on those as well. And you can come to audiotoyou.com or even to my blog, and you can check that out, because I'll no doubt have images up from the tests and stuff that I've done. So absolutely, you can have a look. Now we've got a couple of things to talk about. Do you want to talk about David Elfring's War and Peace epic?
I do want to get to that, but there's one thing that I will mention right now, and certainly, it's just sparked by something you said a moment ago, and that is, I was listening to one of the podcasts that I listen to regularly is the Podcast Brothers, who are a couple of brothers who their podcast is all about the business side of podcasting. Okay. And they were making an interesting comment through the week about how there are sites around the net who repurpose content. So they'll take content from an RSS feed and generate a new RSS feed that distributes that content. So, you know, there are places where you can go and create your own custom podcast feed, which pulls in content from various different podcasts. Okay. So I just wanted to mention just once, I'm not going to make a habit of it, but I just wanted to mention once, you know, if you are a listener to Shudders Inc. and you happen to have a look at the feed that you are getting your podcast from, and it doesn't start with www.audiotoyou.com, just be aware that you're not getting the stuff straight from the source. You're getting it repurposed. So now, for most people, that's probably not an issue, but the Podcast Brothers said, you know, what can happen is that if a site like that goes belly up, you as the podcaster could end up losing hundreds of listeners and not even know it.
Right.
And I thought, that's interesting. So I thought, well, just this week on each of my three podcasts, I'm just going to mention it once to everyone to be aware of it. And if you suddenly find that weeks go by and you haven't received a podcast and you haven't heard from us saying that we weren't going to be doing one, then you might want to look into it. So,
okay.
Anyway.
No, good point.
Yeah. So anyway, on with David Elfring. David Elfring sent us an email a couple of weeks ago, and I posted the photos that he sent up on the Shudders Inc. page last week, but we didn't actually get around to reading the email.
And hello, David, and thank you for that email.
Absolutely.
And I'm sorry that I personally have not had a chance to respond, but young Bruce here has read the epic and given it a good deal of consideration, haven't you, mate?
I have, but funny you should mention not responding, because I've actually tried to email David back four times, and each time I get an email back from a server saying mail undeliverable. So, David, my apologies that you haven't received an email back from me. Believe me, I've tried it. Anyway, he said, "G'day, Shelton and Bruce. I've had your comments on shooting in a minimalist style in my head for the past few weeks. I love doing exactly that. I guess I'm a closet minimalist because I've been tending towards that for the last year. I just didn't realise it. See attached examples."
And if you go to audiotoyou.com, we can all see the attached examples.
Absolutely. "I think minimalism allows me to focus in on one part of a scene and feature it rather than taking a larger shot and trying to frame someone's interest to find it. Most people can't find Waldo, and neither do they find that part of the shot that the photographer probably liked when they took the picture."
And herein, David gets the point, and good on you, mate, for doing that, because that is what our images should be about, you know? You telling people what you want them to see, and rather than ask them to try and find it. Well done, mate. Well done.
Absolutely. "Next, I wanted to relate my positive experience with Nikon's auto settings. When I went to China in March, Shanghai was so rich in scenes that I was beside myself in how to take in all these shots I was seeing. My traditional method was to manually adjust the ISO, shutter speed, and aperture. This wasn't cutting it. The Chinese I met had a very quick eye to sense when you were taking their shots, so the window of opportunity was incredibly short. Finally, out of desperation, I tried using shutter speed mode on my D200 and also set ISO to auto. When walking the Shanghai backstreets, this freed me up to concentrate on what was going on around me rather than fidgeting with my dials. The results can be seen in my China gallery," and I think I've put a link to that in last week's show notes as well.
Right.
"And this is the bit that I wanted to specifically cover this week. Lastly, I also wanted to relate a very positive experience with Adobe Lightroom. It's taken a couple of weeks, but I've imported most of the 40,000 shots I've taken over the past couple of years. The result has given me information that I didn't expect, such as which lenses I favour, which in turn tells me a little more about how to invest my hard-earned hobby money instead of just following the demigod of lens lust. I've attached my initial findings of the major lenses I've used in the past few years. At the risk of creating an email version of War and Peace, I also wanted to relate how I use Lightroom with offline storage to be able to hold all of my photos, plus have a safe backup of them. My main storage for my photographs is a Weebitech dual disk array with two 500 gig drives in it. These drives are set up so that I get a terabyte of storage, of which right now I only take up perhaps 300 gig. This attaches to my Mac via FireWire. I also keep a second backup of the files on another external hard drive that I hook up via a Weebitech combo dock adapter. Both of these use regular IDE drives that I purchase separately. As for the logistics of getting them there, that's a bit of work. My pictures were all already organized by folder using year, month, day, description as the name. So I manually import each directory and customize the metadata for each directory of photos so that I can search them later. You know, kids' birthdays, sunrise, etc. Right now, the database is 338 meg, but the picture preview file is 2.4 gigs. I also keep those files on my external storage, and it makes it pretty simple to use Lightroom on multiple computers and still have access to the same organization of pictures. For example, in the middle of doing this, my primary Mac suffered a major issue and is in the shop. No problem, I just hooked up my 12-inch backup machine, loaded Lightroom, pointed it to the database location on the large external drive, and in about 10 minutes, all was right with the world. So I thought that was really an interesting way of using Lightroom and having your storage networked so that, you know, if something does happen to your primary machine, and by having the database file live on that machine as or on that external drive as well, you know, so if something happened to your operating system, you don't lose the database because, you know, I think anyone who's worked with any kind of image cataloging program, whether it be, you know, Thumbs Plus or Adobe Bridge or, you know, Lightroom or, you know, what's the Aperture, is it on the Apple?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, any of these things, they create like a database of thumbnail images, you know, and if you lose that, you can lose days worth of work, you know, in, you know, what you've done in cataloging your stuff. So yeah, I just wanted to share David's thoughts on that to anyone who sort of hadn't really thought it through about the best way to manage their images, you know, because I know for myself, you know, now that I'm shooting RAW, when you're shooting a 10 meg file every time, it adds up very quickly.
Yes, yes, very much.
So yeah, so I just wanted to share those thoughts and leave it with people to meditate as they will.
It's something I know I can take certainly a leaf out of David's book because it's one of the few things that I need to sort of correct. Well, no, one of the few things. I need lots of correcting, but one of the many things that I need to correct about
Photoshop.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Otherwise, my photography would be rubbish. You know, no. But it is an excellent, you know, an excellent point to make because I know that I've suffered that, you know, loss of database information. And I use for my DVD discs, you know, I back up to a DVD and I've got two iMation disc stackers.
Yep.
When I put, you know, my DVDs. But recently I lost the database that it had created. Every time you put a CD into your or a DVD into your player or into your drive, it reads it and it'll put that information of what's on that disc into the iMation disk stacker database.
Right.
But I lost that information recently and now I've got to go back and do that all again so that I can quickly tell the disk stacker, hey, I want to find my China pictures or my Peru pictures or whatever. And out comes the disk. So yeah, I know exactly what David's saying and it's you know, good on him for doing that work and having the system set up that way.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know what I really like about David's email?
What?
Is that at the end he says, as always, thanks for the podcast. It is always useful, and I love how you guys work together. Best podcast I listen to.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's fun. And he likes how we work together. Little does he know we live, you know, 1,200 kilometers apart.
Yeah.
Really don't like each other all that. You know?
But that's it.
Seems we work together
all this
well.
Forced joviality.
Yes. I wanted to thank I wanted to thank everybody for the emails that we've sent. Now, last week we set you an assignment, and you probably haven't had time to do it, listeners. But about revealing form in your. So we haven't received. I haven't received a single email from anyone that I think actually highlights that. But we have had some thanks for the Gorilla Pod. People thanking us for the Gorilla Pods getting out their way or getting on their way.
Yep.
And if you haven't received yours, it will, because others have received theirs.
Yep,
so
mine arrived on Tuesday.
Mine arrived yesterday.
Cool.
Yep. So, love that little thing. And it will be, it will be a great little addition to carrying around my Ricoh GR, actually. So, that's great. But you will get yours soon, you winners. So, and they're a great little thing. They really
Absolutely.
Are. You know, a really great little toy.
I was saying to Kath, the great thing about it, because it's so compact, if you were going out to a restaurant for dinner with a group of friends that you hadn't caught up with for ages, and you knew you were going to want a photograph, you could just take that in your handbag if you're a girl, or stuff it in your pocket if you're a guy, because it's so damn small, and then you could just set it up on the restaurant table and everyone could be in the shot, or whatever,
Yep. Or indeed what I intend to do with it, apart from using it on my Ricoh GR, is use it with my my Nikon flash, for off-camera flash. Which brings me to my before we get on to the subject of revealing texture with light, which is what we're going to do, one of our regular listeners, Daryl Gungadu, and I hope I've said your name correctly, you're a better man than I, Gungadu, is that the line from the movie? Sorry, David. Oh, Gungadin, right, yeah. Sorry, David, you probably get that a lot. He was looking at my blog, and it asked me a question regarding a photograph that I took of my nephew's bride on their wedding day. And it's a photograph where she's backlit by the sun, but but she's lit from the side. And basically, to answer the question, Daryl, that's exactly what I did. I deliberately put the sun behind her so that it would come through her veil. And I had the groom, my nephew, as my photography assistant, off to my right, and he held the flash, and I basically just triggered the flash with my little pop-up flash on the D200 and used it all ITTL. You could have done that with any flash if you knew how to set it up, but the great thing about the ITTL is that it's all TTL, exactly as per the description, and you don't have to muck about too much. The thing about that shot, Daryl, is that I was running out of time. The couple really wanted to go, but they also had this idea for a photograph. We were against the time, against the time, against the clock, and I really wanted to get this shot done. So I set the camera up. I got down on a low angle. I looked up at her with the sun behind her. I metered manually. So that I think I was underexposing actually a stop, and I let the flash take over the exposure for the bride, so that I'd get some texture in the veil, but enough light on the face. So I
is
hope
this
that
the
answers.
Shot we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks?
No, this is a different one.
Oh,
If you go to my blog, and that is off my website on the newspaper. There's a shot of Melissa, who's my my nephew's new wife.
Right.
And I can actually send it to the audiotu.com website if you want to have a look.
Yeah, sure.
Seems like that wedding has revealed a few interesting things for people, including myself. But have a look at that if you want to if you want to know what Daryl's talking about, or you can go to my blog and have a look at it. Basically, that's the benefit of this fabulous flash system. So it would have been much more difficult to do with a reflector, but as we talked about last week, there is a shot on the previous week's section that on the audiotu.com website that shows how I used backlighting, because this is what we were talking about, but also a reflector to throw some light back and give us some shape and some form. But this one was done with flash, Daryl, and thank you for looking and thank you for asking. Let me know if that's enough information for you. I don't know what else to tell you, but if that answers your question, I hope it does. And now let's get back to what we're always talking about, And that is, of course, and we've got a couple more weeks to talk about yet. We're just going to talk today briefly, because it's not a long subject, but briefly about using light to reveal texture. In previous weeks, we've talked about using light to reveal shape. Last week, we talked about form, you know, three dimensions out of two. This week, texture. Now, basically, at the heart of all of this is that we're talking about using light to reveal the very nature of your subject. That's really what we're doing, to either reveal its nature, highlight one aspect of its nature, or alter its nature, at least in visual terms. So this week, we thought that we would talk about what else light can do, and that is to reveal texture. Now, texture is important to us because, especially if we're photographers, because we want our photographers to convey sometimes as much reality as possible, or at least to draw us in to the image. And texture appeals to the very nature of humans because we're tactile. I mean, when you pick up something, when you see something, imagine for instance smooth skin on a baby's cheeks, or your bark on a tree, or you know, we are tactile people. We like to feel the texture and nature of anything that we have, of physical things. So we can use light to reveal texture so that in a photograph you can almost feel what the subject would be like just by looking at it. We do that with our eyes. You know, we can look at something and say, oh, that would feel rough or that would feel smooth. And then we actually go up and, and touch it with our hands. A photograph isn't going to reveal that to us physically, of course, but it can do so visually. So we use light to reveal texture. And we can do that by angling the light from either the top, the side, or an angle from to the actual texture. So, for instance, if your texture is the bark of a tree, you know, you would want your light to be to the side of you, or you know, coming from the top, because the texture of a tree, you know, basically goes all ways. The bark has, you know, texture that goes sideways and up and down. Depends on where you throw your shadows, and that really is it. It's all about the difference between, you know, what is lit and then what is in the shadow. And because fine textures such as bark and skin and rocks and things like that, because they have because there are so many shadows created because of the nature of the texture, that's basically how the idea of the texture is created in the image. If you use frontal lighting such as flash or direct sunlight, usually that will only hide the texture because very little shadow is created, and so that's why, again, we prefer not to use, say, straight-on flash if we can possibly avoid it, or we make sure that the sun is at an angle that it, you know, will reveal some texture. The more subtle the texture, let's say, for instance, what we were talking about before, a baby's skin, often you would say that the harder the lighting is required, but this is the problem. It's generally the rule. If you have rocks, for instance, or bark, usually you want relatively hard lighting because that kind of texture can withstand that kind of hard light. Although, you know, soft light will do, but it doesn't reveal as harshly, you might say, or as distinctly the shadowed edges as a harder light will do. The problem, though, is in portraiture, such as, you know, children or bridal or, you know, glamour or, you know, hard lighting often doesn't do them any favors, and it's quite uncomplimentary in for portraits. So you can use softer lighting, but just be aware that you will need to, if you want to reveal textures, just have an element of specularity to it. For instance, there's a bit of a difference between the way a softbox will reveal, if you're in studio, the way a softbox will reveal texture, to the way, say, a brolly, a silver or gold or, you know, white brolly will reveal texture. And each of those as well, the difference between a white brolly that's reflective or a silver brolly that's reflective in revealing texture can be quite visible, quite manifest. So this is all where our learning curves come in. If the skin texture of a portrait is soft, such as a baby, and you're using, you know, hard contrasty light, it's going to be a little bit of a problem, but it can be done. Just, you know, you will always be able to reveal some sort of texture, but the harder the light, usually on harder textures, the better or the more effective the texture is revealed. This is where your eye and your experience comes in, though. We could say something general, a sweeping comment like, never use hard light on a portrait. But that would not be the case if you were photographing, say, a rugged, you know, face of, you know, a cowboy, or a, you know, an Australian outback stockman, or you know, an old lady in a Chinese marketplace, or something like that. Hard light, that is, you know, we're not talking about blowing out the features, but we're talking about fairly specular light, is the perfect thing. Because that kind of portrait is about the texture. It's about what the face is saying. You know, there's 100 years of life in this face. So I'm going to reveal that by means of the lighting that I'm going to use. If we took that person into a studio and we used a softbox and tried to hide those lines, that's a completely different thing. So where we want to reveal texture, and where we want to maybe lose that texture, is where we will alter the nature of the light. And this is the lesson, really, that the softness or the hardness of the light can be varied, and there are gradations between those kinds of light. So you don't just have hard or soft, you can have variations in between. If you're working with daylight, then there's not a lot you can really do other than, you know, move the subject into a place whereby the light is a little more effective in terms of what you want it to achieve. But if you're working with studio lighting, then it's a good idea to know the difference between how an umbrella works, how a softbox works, and why you would use one or the other depending on what you wanted to do. So this is the lesson. We need to understand the nature of the light that we're working with. We've talked about how it reveals shape and form, but that's usually about the direction of the light. Although last week we talked about the fact that diffused light, you know, reduces contrast, and hard light, you know, will increase it. Both of those things are fine for revealing form. But what we haven't really concentrated as much on, and what we're talking about more today, is not just the direction of the light, but its very nature. Now imagine that you take that light and you use it now to reveal not only shape, but form, shape and then form, but also texture. You see how we're starting to form we're starting to use light as a much more complete and all-round tool, because there are times when you can use light. The light you're given, or the way you manipulate or work that light to reveal shape, form, and texture. If you can do that, then you're really starting to get a very effective or evocative image, an image that draws the person in because they're seeing something that is very real, and yet, of course, it's an image.
Would I be correct in assuming that once you've really got your head around this, you could start to use different light sources to achieve each of those three different things?
Absolutely. Or combinations of light sources. Mm. You know, like we've talked about last week, I used reflected light and sunlight on Melissa for, you know, her bridal portrait.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're doing. And of course, what I was just talking about with the image that Daryl asked about, that was a combination of flash and sun, and also how I used the you know, exposure to bias one over the other, or to emphasize one over and above the other. So we most definitely can do that, and that's the lesson. That's what we as photographers spend the rest of our lives learning. How do I use light then to make the most of this subject? Now, if we've taken to heart that which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, shape, and then last week form, and now texture, if we take those things and we look at the light we're given, and, I mean, this will become an easier process the more we do it, and we say to ourselves, I'm going to reveal as much about this as possible, then you know, we can do that. Now, take yourself into the studio. Here in a studio, you have the option to use many different light sources, and you can alter the nature of the light. You could perhaps use a hair light, and you might decide that you don't want to soften it, and you will just put the flash head straight on at the back of the subject's, you know, shining on the back of the subject's head, and then use on the other side, you know, as a key light, as a front light, as your main light, a softbox or a brolly. Now you're working with two different kinds of light. You've got a hard or more specular light at the back, and, you know, which will highlight, you know, hair and maybe the texture of the clothing that the person's working with or wearing, rather. And then, you know, the light that's used to, you know, shape the face, which is what we talked about last week, will be your umbrella or your softbox. And in this, the interesting thing about that is that you're doing exactly what you just said, Bruce. You're working with different kinds of light. Different, the nature of the light is different. The direction of the light is different. The purpose of the light is different.
Yeah,
the
right.
purpose, you know, and so you can do this outside as well. For instance, Daryl, you'll notice that when you were interested in that photograph of Melissa because, one, you had a light source at the back very clearly lighting the veil. You had another light source off to the side shaping and illuminating the face and giving some texture as well. That's what we use light to do. So not only are we talking about light, and I don't want our listeners to think that we have an either-or situation going on here. The reason that we've talked about it first to reveal shape, then to reveal form, and then to reveal texture is that we are really talking about, you know, progressive learning and how to use all of these things in one situation. And the studio is an ideal example of that, but not all of us have access to a studio or studio lighting. But it can be done using flash and sunlight, sunlight and reflector, sunlight, reflector, flash, bounce flash, all, if you know how to manipulate light or to work with the light that is there, say you've got a combination of window light, you can use a reflector, you can use flash as well to have hard light and soft light, you know, light that reveals texture and shape at the same time. Let's learn to look at the light we're given or look at the light we can use and try to reveal more about the image, about the subject, rather than we have perhaps been doing. That's what we're really doing with light. That's why photographers use light, because light does manifest so many different aspects to our subject that draw the viewer in. And it's what we use to, you know, to burn the image onto our medium. But it also, it's what we use to reveal the nature of the subject. And that could be anything from a rock, a landscape, a portrait, a still life. So use as many of the things that we've talked about so far, how to reveal shape, how to reveal form, how to reveal texture, in one photograph as possible. Not just think that, oh, well, I'm going to use it to do one or the other. You can actually use it to do all three. Next week, we're going to talk about using light to reveal emotion or to evoke emotion. So you can imagine that, and then of course we're going to talk about how light can be used to highlight and saturate color. Imagine if at the end of these, you know, 5 weeks, we are in a situation whereby using the light we're given, we can reveal shape, form, texture, color, and emotion in one image. That's really what we're out to achieve as much as possible, or as many of those five as possible in one image if we possibly can, or the reverse of that, only one, and that can be just as interesting, evocative as using all five, depending on which one, of course, we choose to use. So that's really what we're learning. I don't want our listeners to think that we're talking about these one at a time, because you can only do them one at a time. Actually, if you study it, you can actually do all three so far in one image, you know, and that's something to try and consider. So take your cameras out on the weekend and see if that's what you can, you know, if that's what you can do. Mm. And we'll see how you go. But I'd like to see some efforts from listeners to see that they're actually benefiting from these podcasts about light, because Flight is such an important subject. And if you've got any questions on any of the things that we've talked about so far, or, you know, agreements, disagreements, let me know, because I want to make sure that at the end of these weeks of discussing light, that we understand how to use it. And then, of course, take just the brief bit of information that we've given here and build on it in your own experience.
Wax on, wax off, Daniel Sun.
Lots of practice.
Go out there and wash my car, boy. That was a good, the old Karate Kid. Boy, oh boy, there's a blast from the past.
Yeah.
Ralph Macchio.
Max has been watching that recently. He loves it.
Oh, really? has he been beating up Dad?
No.
No?
No, no. All right. No, no. Just likes the movie.
He hasn't done the crane thing? Hasn't gotten up on a footstool? No? Okay.
No.
All right. Fair enough. Wax off.
Yeah. Just a reminder, too, that if you do want to email us, you can email shelton@audiotu.com or studio@audiotu.com, or even better, both, so that we both get the email.
Yep, that's good. Which a lot of you have been doing. Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And next week, like I said, you're talking about using light to evoke emotion. And that's a very important thing. So stay tuned, because what we're really talking about is drawing people into our images, drawing ourselves into our images. And that's what we're going to be continuing to talk about. So stay tuned. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Fantastic. Thanks, mate. Talk to you then.
Thanks to you, Bruce. You bet. See ya.
See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.